Second hour here on this Tuesday. Hope everybody's having a great day. Predators are going to talk this week. It's probably coming here, I would say, in the next couple of days. Well, probably Thursday, Friday. I don't know, maybe tomorrow. We know it's not happening today. But here in the next couple of days, we're going to hear from the Predators kind of the end of the year. So there's going to be a lot to discuss. And, you know, it's going to be a little bit different than it's been in the past, just like the Titans went through the same thing with how their season ended. And it's been a little bit different offseason with them as well. David Poile, John Hines, I don't know, do we expect, Willie, both of them to be available for this here in the next couple of days? That's typically how it works, right? Coach,
yes.
General manager?
Yes.
What do we think is going to be, like I said, it's going to be a different press conference than in the past. What do we think is going to be the number one thing that they're going to want to address in this press conference? And then we'll flip it to the other side here in just a minute.
Well,
things on their end.
I would say, number one, they had better be prepared for you know, a lot of questions, as should be the case, right? This is not going to be a run-of-the-mill thing because they're at a tough crossroads because the situation is very clear. As we've laid out, you've got a passionate fan base. And I was listening to Elliott's 32 Thoughts podcast. They basically went through, over the weekend, the five teams that were just eliminated and went through their list of questions. It's always hard when your season ends because immediately you start with the questions of, okay, where do we go from here? Didn't win a championship, didn't win a round of the playoffs. What are we doing? You know, who's back, who's not back, all of these things. So in general, you have that, but I think, you know, basically here, you have to continue to articulate the direction that you want ahead. Because I do think, as I've said from the start, they've done an excellent job of reworking the roster. I will stand by this. When they lost in the bubble of 2020, which was really Peter Laviolette's team that they changed coaches, then they had the pause. Mm-hmm. They had a broken team. They had Kyle Turris, mm-hmm. and that was a mess. They had Matt Duchene.
So they lost to Arizona. Yep.
When they lost to Arizona, to me, that was the breaking point of, okay, we got to do something here. We can't come back with this same group. So what did they do? They moved on from Kyle Turris. They traded a veteran in Nick Bonino, who was a really, really good player, but they had to get younger. They let Craig Smith go to free agency. Then the following year, they trade Victor Arvidsson, Callie Yarncroak, Ryan Ellis, or, you know, they lost Yarncroak to the
expansion.
They traded Austin Watson. You know, so they've done a good job of addressing what had to happen. But in the meantime, they haven't been able to win any playoff series. But I think it's fair to say under John Hines in those 2 years, they have overachieved to continue to make the playoffs. I think a lot of people in 2020 would have said they're not going to be able to sustain. They're going to take a big dip. Now, I think there's a valid argument to be made that maybe they should have bit the bullet and even gone further down mm-hmm. to try to reload quicker, trade off even more to rebuild. But like we said, there's a price to be paid for that, right? I like making the playoffs. I like seeing winning teams. I like seeing competitive teams. But I think that's now what they've got to try to sell is, okay, we've done the dirty work here. We've gotten younger. We've figured out which young players can play, which ones can't, what's the right role for these guys. We've created some flexibility in our salary cap. And here's how we're going to take the next step forward. But that would be my answer. That you tell me where you disagree.
So listening to you, so does it mean the competitive rebuild is over?
And see, now that's a good question because people are going to want to hear definitions, right?
Exactly.
I just think you want to come into next year's next year's season. And this is just
but
my
it can't
opinion.
Be it can't be a if you go into next year's season based on what you just said. The team has gotten younger. You've seen some of these younger players play now, and you know which ones are your guys. So if that is indeed the case, if they do indeed go into the press conference like that, then it shouldn't be, well, this next upcoming season is another competitive rebuild.
Yeah, I hope they're further along mm-hmm. next year. I think they're ready to add a couple of veterans that could really give them a better chance. There's some teams that just lost in the first round that I thought had everything that you could need to win a championship. Mm-hmm. I think Toronto, they could have been good enough to go deep and win the whole thing. They lost in the first round in a razor's edge 7-game series. You know, do I think the Predators are going to be a favorite to win the Stanley Cup next year, regardless of what they do? No, I don't think they're going to be there. But I think they could take a step forward to where they could put themselves in a better position to win in the playoffs.
Okay, here's a question.
With a little more veteran team with that young group that has established itself.
Here's a question for both of y'all, Dan, because I'm listening to you and I'm pretty sure Darren, you know, agrees, hey, this team now, because of this, because they have money under the salary cap, they need to start using that. And you typically yeah. use it to go get veteran guys that can still play and that can mesh with the squad that you have now. Which area would you which area would you pinpoint to say, okay, this is the area where we need to add a veteran guy? The position I think they need another goalie. That's just me, because whether it's Riddick or Ingram, neither one of them have proven that if anything happens to Soros, that this team is going to be okay.
Riddick is a free agent.
Yeah.
I think he'll probably move on. You may have seen that they signed
another young guy.
Askarov. Uh-huh. He's their first-round pick a couple years ago. He's still very young. I think Connor Ingram will be in the mix to be the backup next year. I think they're really high on him. He's dominated in the AHL for 5 years, so he's had a lot of seasoning. His path got sidetracked because of he went into the program mm-hmm. 2 years ago. But that's an interesting question. Will they bring in another veteran goalie just to have on hand? And how much do you spend on that? I think that's mm-hmm. one. The other one to me, Darren, is I just think you need some help in the top six. We know that. Now, the second line in particular, mm-hmm. I think somewhere in there, whether it's trade or free agency, creativity, you need to try to find a way to enhance that second line. And I also think the one more veteran, hard-nosed defenseman who fits with the way they want to play would be nice. Now, who these guys are, that's where it gets difficult. That's where the decision makers have to make the right decisions, and there's no easy answer. I heard Ryan Porth this morning, Darren, talking about the Blues and how a couple of moves that they made have hit big. Pavel Buchnevich, not a superstar guy, right? But he was the right guy for that team. And he had a great year. Jackpot. Saying that Brandon Saad, he's bounced around and played for a lot of different teams in his career. He was the perfect fit
played
for the Blues.
A lot of winning teams, though. So he's got
– Yeah, but
– He knows how to win.
Oh, yeah, but he's – I mean, he goes way back. He's getting older. Yeah. He's not a guy that was commanding an 8-year deal, mm-hmm. right? No. He's been available. He's bounced around. He went from Chicago to Columbus, back to Chicago. Then he went to where did he go? He went to another place and then ended up on the Blues. So he's circulated around. I thought his stock was kind of down, but right guy, right spot. And so that's what Nashville needs to hit on, I think. Because you can't just go out and spend mm-hmm. whatever you want, right? You got to be smart with how you spend it.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Look, I hear you, D-Mace, uh-huh. on the backup, but I mean, the way John Hines plays the starter, and I get it, maybe because UC got hurt. I don't really look at it. I know there's a lot of people that say, hey, the workload is the reason. Like, I just don't buy that the workload was the reason. And I know a lot of people questioned it, and I understand that. We're questioning the workload even before the injury. So you're fair, anybody out there who feels that played a part or the workload is too much, okay. I think that's a good discussion piece. I do. But John Hines has not been afraid to ride UC Soros. And as we've talked about already in this offseason, if you're in that camp, then you also need to understand if you're in that camp and let's say 8 less starts by UC Soros, this team probably doesn't make the playoffs. So then now you're a non-playoff team as well. So you maybe UC Soros gets hurt, maybe he doesn't. Either way, then your season ends after 82 games because I don't think they get in. I think it's kind of like the backup quarterback, and I understand I'm the one that's, you know, pushing for a better backup quarterback, but you know, they also don't have the elite quarterback. And so that's why I say they have the elite goaltender. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's a little bit lesser than on the Titans level where I've been pushing for a better backup because it's like, I don't believe Mariota's the guy. I don't believe he's elite. I don't, you know, Jake Locker was the same thing. Same deal with, you know, Vince Young. Same deal with Ryan Tannehill. And so you want them to be pushed and you want a good option in case they're either not playing well or they get hurt. Where in this case, you know, a lot of times when you have the elite quarterback or the elite goaltender and you're going to play them, in the case of a quarterback, they're never coming out unless they get hurt. It doesn't matter. I mean, I understand, like, honestly, like the Indianapolis Colts for a long time, it never, as you know, mm-hmm. you played against them, you probably didn't even know who their backup was or cared because you were never going to see that quarterback, right? You guys were never going to face that quarterback because they just sat there and held a clipboard. You know, there's not very many 1-2 punches in the NHL where you have, oh, no fall off or very little drop off from starter to backup. I think Connor Ingram can be good enough. So I mean, when you think about the difference in this team taking another step, I just can't imagine that is anywhere near the top of their list of things to do this offseason. To me, I think they're going to give Connor Ingram every opportunity to be the backup, and I think he's good enough to be the backup in the spot that he'll play next season. So that's just my two cents. I just think it's on down the list of importance to take that next step. Backup goaltender, in my opinion, is pretty far down. But I do think some of the other things, Willie, you laid out with top six and even a veteran defenseman, we can discuss on the other side because I do think they're valid points, and we will do that. By the way, we will give away another pair of George Thurgood tickets for Thursday night at the Ryman. Congratulations to Robert in Columbia, Tennessee, for being lucky caller six. Thanks for listening, and go enjoy that show on Thursday. More DDC next. Sounds baseball tonight on 94.9. They begin a six-game homestand against the Louisville Bats. 6:35 is first pitch. Pre-game coverage starting at 6:20. Sounds Baseball, presented by 312 Pizza, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Spirited Hive. Back here on the DDC, Dan Duva is the Vegas play-by-play man for radio. We'll have him at the bottom of the hour, find out where are the Golden Knights looking next now that they've shown Peter DeBoer the door. So where do they turn?
Peter DeBoer shown the door.
The door. Where do they turn their attentions next? I'm curious to find out because we had that discussion yesterday when we learned that he was not going to be retained. And so they've got a team that and a lot of pressure out there to win because they've spent a lot of money. They've been very active, and we'll see where they turn for their next head coach. 3 coaches in 5 years. Pretty interesting. So we'll do that at the bottom of the hour.
They got a lot of history in only 5 years.
A lot of history in 5 years. Okay, the other part of this, talking about the Predators offseason, and this is where I'm not sure. So how do you fix that? Obviously, you know, goes without saying is that, you know, the Philip Forsberg, which, by the way, you know, tick-tock, you know, what, about 7 weeks away from free agency? So
it's going to be – I don't know if they'll have any answers, but they know it's the number one question.
Yep. And so that is – because I said on Monday's hit with Robbie and Rex Road, I said, you know, if they don't bring him back – because there's a lot of people now starting to believe he's going to walk, and if that is the case, then, you know, going back to the plan, which we had fun with, you know, I said, he's got to be in the plan, and if he's not in the plan moving forward, then you probably have to go back in a room, shut the door, and come up with a new plan. Because I do think that changes your plan. Like, you can't, in my opinion, and I want you guys to weigh in, I don't think you say, well, you know, we just, he just wanted too much, and hey, we'll just go out and pay somebody big money to replace Philip Forsberg, because what, you're not improving anything. You're just staying. So then what, how do you then fix other things, right? Like, so I, to me, that changes things. Agree or disagree?
No, I agree with you, because if you say, well, hey, listen, Philip just asked for too much money. He wanted, and if, say if the number comes out,
we just couldn't agree on it.
Eight, yep, and a half, nine. We just couldn't agree on that. Well, then you can't go get another player and pay
and
that
pay
player
them, right,
$8 million or $9 million and say, oh, we've upgraded. That person has to be, from a skill standpoint, much better than what you just lost. And if that's indeed the case, he's coming in, you know, wanting more than just $8 million, if that is indeed the case. So how do you do it? Well, you try to sign two people, you know, that you're going to get the production that you would have gotten for Philip Forsberg. That's the only way you sort of kind of fix, if indeed he doesn't sign. I think that's the only way that you kind of, you know, make the Predator fans understand, well, yeah, we did lose Philip, but we got two guys that can make up for the production and help in other ways as well.
So you have to start there. I mean, you have to, and it does, to me, change your plan if he walks.
Yeah.
Like, you have to come up with a new plan. And the reason I say you have to come up with a new plan, it's like, well, duh. No, I'm saying it may change your new plan. Like, the new plan may be, okay,
is the formula out there that you can
replace? Now we're going a different direction.
Yeah, that's a fair question. And it would not surprise me at all if it went right down to the last day that they can offer him the 8-year deal. Mm-hmm. The Landeskog situation, it went right down to the last minute. It went right to the eve of free agency. Steven Stamkos, way back, it went right down to the last minute before Tampa was able to keep him. Mm-hmm. It looked like he might walk and go to the Maple Leafs. I think that was, ironically, who they just beat in seven games. Last year, not the same exact situation, because we weren't talking about an 8-year deal, but mm-hmm. Mikael Granlund, they upped it right at the last minute and got him. So I don't know what it takes sometimes in these situations, if it's the coach or the agent or somebody, the owner, coming in and saying, you've got to get this done. But it wouldn't surprise me if it takes a while to get the Forsberg situation resolved. And it's going to be excruciating between now and whenever it's resolved, right? Because it's everything that you do going forward is probably related to what happens with him in a lot of ways.
So with that being said, again, because there's one plan that you have, and that plan includes Philip Forsberg. Yeah,
yep.
It includes Philip Forsberg. Mm-hmm. When do you transition to that
B.
second plan?
Yep.
And do you have a second plan?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you saying, hey, listen, this is plan A, and if we get to the 12th hour, plan B is to up the ante, whether it be the money,
yeah,
or the no-trade clause?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's where negotiations have to go on. But I'll add perspective again. A lot of teams have these situations. Boston's got to figure out, is Patrice Bergeron coming back? He may not be ready to tell them that right now. He's the captain. He is Mr. Franchise there. He's getting up there in age. What's the right amount of years? Pittsburgh's got three guys. Chris Letang, Evgeny Malkin, Brian Rust, all unrestricted free agents, all at different stages of the career. By the way, Pittsburgh has lost in the first round four straight years now. Four straight years. Washington has lost in the first round four straight years since winning the cup. Now, you could say, well, they won cups. They did. Mm-hmm. But they're now getting further and further removed, and so these are tough decisions. So what do you offer these guys? So there's a lot. I don't think a lot of teams right now are sitting there going, we know exactly what we need to do. Everybody's got some contracts that they've got to address, and what do we do? But I think the Forsberg one is a big one for sure. And you may want to have it resolved. You may not have it resolved until we walk right up to the doorstep of free agency.
Yeah, because that's one of the questions on our text line. Nate on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Could they be waiting this long to do a presser to see if they can get Forsberg signed and take some pressure off David Poyle? It seems like they've waited a good while to do this presser after the season ended. I don't really think that they've waited that much. I mean, I haven't gone back and chronicled when they typically do it, when the season ends. I don't believe that's it. They're not waiting to come up with – I don't believe a magical here in 2 days. Hey, let's just start off the press conference by saying – here's Philip Forsberg. We've just re-signed him. 8-year deal. Congrats. You know, I don't see that at all. I think they're in a room. They know that this is going to be different. Kind of like this is what started this whole conversation. It's different. This is not going to be your typical end-of-the-year press conference. The lay of the land is different. Just like I said, the Titans went into their offseason. It was different. Expectations have changed. Feelings have changed. A lot of big decisions. A lot of big things. Things have already happened on the Titans front, and a lot of big things could be happening here soon on the Predators front. So I don't know how long they've typically waited. I haven't viewed it as that, like, oh, they're stalling a couple more days to come up with some big news. Now, that could happen. I don't see it. I don't think you've come all the way here to announce on, you know, May 19th, hey, we got it done. I know it's taken all this long, but here we go. I don't see that. I don't see that at all. I think they're in there figuring out, you know, how they're going to present this press conference because, again, this is going to be different. That's my two cents. It's just not going to be your typical, hey, tough loss, you know. But overall, this is a, you know, really good regular. Which a lot of it's true.
That's a good thing.
It's true. But
the fans don't want to hear that.
But I was going to say, but we live in the lay of the land.
But we live in a hockey market, which is great because we're now a hockey market.
That's right.
It's not, you know, maybe, you know, it's not 2003 or whatever. We've moved on. People have grown up. They want to win. It's good. It's a good thing.
Yep. No, there's no doubt about it. All right, we'll come back. Dan Duva is the play-by-play guy for the Golden Knights. What's next for them? Peter DeBoer was shown the door yesterday. He's out. Vegas not making the playoffs for the first time in franchise history. Yes, albeit they've only been in the league 5 years, but they fired their head coach that just took them to a conference final. We'll find out from Dan what's next with him. But first, Willie, you're going to tell everybody about Loan Pronto.
All right, let's talk Loan Pronto. Loan Pronto knows that for one reason or another, you might be in a situation where you've got some bills to pay. You've got some loans, whether it's credit card bills or you're sending your kids off to college or you've got other personal loans, PMI charges, things like that, that are hamstringing you a little bit. That happens to a lot of people. But here is what Loan Pronto has as an offer for you. Take advantage, if you're a homeowner, of the fact that your home value is really up right now. It's really up, and so inflation's been really good for your home's value. So you have a lot of home equity, possibly, and if you do, that could be cash that you can use right now in a debt consolidation refi through Loan Pronto. They can do this fast and easy, take money out of your home to pay off all your credit cards, eliminate those PMI charges, pay off those personal loans or other high-interest debt. There's a lot of great examples of homeowners doing this. One couple recently had a $50,000 credit card debt that was sitting there. Also some personal loans. Loan Pronto did this debt consolidation refi, and even though their mortgage rate climbed a little bit, they cut their monthly payments by $900 a month. Think about that for your budget. So why pay 20% interest when you can consolidate all of this into one low payment with mortgage rates in the threes? So call Loan Pronto and find out more about this. 615-499-5780. That's 615-499-5780 or go to loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender, NMLS, 166-1781, subject to lender approval.
Becker on the DDC on this Tuesday. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Derek Mason with you. We were at the golf course yesterday, Hermitage Golf Course, having a great time doing our show, then golfing afterwards for a great cause. And this story came down the pike, which certainly got our attention in the middle of our show. Vegas and Peter DeBoer, no more. Dan Duva is on the line with us. He's the play-by-play man for the Golden Knights on radio. So, Dan, we were sitting here. Not that we didn't – we weren't – I wouldn't say shocked. We didn't fall out of our chair. We thought it could happen. Vegas didn't make the playoffs for the first time in their franchise history. But what was the surprise level out there? Was it high? Was it low?
Yeah, it's a good question, guys. Good to be with you. It's I think it was less surprising than it was when they made the Gerard Gallant change in the middle of the season a couple of years ago. And that was surprising because, you know, the Knights had never had a coach other than Gerard Gallant. But this time around, because of the quick change, the thought process to change as quickly as they did with Gerard, well, you know, now you've had two coaches who have both coached basically 2.5 NHL seasons. And that's less than the NHL average, but it's sort of like the Lou Lamoriello average. You know, it's George McPhee is a Lou Lamoriello disciple, and, you know, Kelly McCrimmon, we don't really know, you know, his MO because this is his first go-around in the National Hockey League, first as an assistant GM with the Knights under George, and now as the GM himself. So it seems to me that, the language that Lou Lamoriello used the other day talking about the change from Barry Trotz, a lot of that was duplicated, you know, a new voice when Kelly McCrimmon spoke about removing Peter DeBoer. And there was one more year left on his contract. And, you would think that if Pete wants another job, he'll get one. But I would say that the surprise level was lower than it was 2.5 years ago.
I said yesterday that to me, Peter DeBoer, without being around him, just looking at his track record, and I know the Predators have faced him, and seeing how he operates in press conferences, and I said, honestly, he reminds me a lot of Peter Laviolette because we dealt with Peter here, and it's like they have a shelf life, right? Because they both win at a high level and pretty are impactful pretty much right away. But, you know, the way they handle the media, the way they go about their business, you know, Peter from afar, as in DeBoer, seems a little rough around the edges, just like Laviolette was here and has been everywhere. And it's like they kind of have like that 4-year window and then it's time to move on. Was that kind of the feeling? Do you think that's a fair comparison?
Yeah, I think elements of that are fair, no doubt. And, you know, Pete's previous stops, remember he had never coached in the minor leagues. He jumped right from the OHL to being the head coach of the Florida Panthers. And, you know, he had success, the first year with the New Jersey Devils, that great run to the 2012 final when they lost against Los Angeles. First year, then the next go-around with San Jose, final, lost. And he's never been in a city for 5 seasons. You know, his San Jose stint was the longest of his career, and it ends up 2.5 years in Vegas will end up being his shortest through his first 4 NHL stops. So, yeah, like, and then, you know, you wonder about, again, because we were talking about Gerard Gallant, look what he's done in his first year with the New York Rangers. How long does that work in New York? And it worked well in Vegas for the first year, but, you know, I think back to that stretch in when the Knights were struggling, like they kept falling behind. I don't know, but maybe a group of players, you know, starts to tune out a head coach at some point. Is that, are some coaches immune from that? Ask John Cooper, who was the longest tenured coach, who's been in Tampa Bay since 2013 when he was promoted. So I think that, Gerard Gallant was more of a player's coach than Pete DeBoer was. Gerard would kind of just let the players police themselves. Pete was more corporate. I think he was, remember, he's has a law degree, and he's very careful with how he selects his words, his messaging. It's quite deliberate, which is not to say he doesn't expect more from his players. Max Pacioretty is one guy who talked about how Pete helped him add layers to his game. But very different in their personalities, Gerard Gallant, Pete DeBoer. I see what you're saying with Peter Laviolette, and they're very well maybe something to that. I haven't personally spent as much time around Pete Laviolette as I have around Pete DeBoer, of course, but I certainly see where you're going for.
it seems like this Vegas roster is set up for an experienced coach. At least that's what it seems like from where we are in Nashville. And you've got Barry Trotz out there, who obviously spent a long time here, has won a cup in Washington. You've got Quenneville. We know all of his successes in Chicago. But, you know, I don't know what the situation is with him right now in the league. But we know he can win. Tortorella. You think that's kind of the direction that Vegas is looking at, a more experienced coach rather than a young, up-and-coming, you know, whippersnapper?
Kelly McCrimmon was asked that question yesterday, and he said, I'm not sure. And whether that's a fully honest answer or not, I don't know. But that's what Kelly McCrimmon said yesterday. You would think that a team that is this poised to win deserves an experienced coach rather than someone who would need to learn on the fly, or someone who maybe has had a great track record in the minors, or somebody who's had a great track record in junior or college. You would expect that with a veteran-laden team, the likes of, you know, Petrangelo and Martinez and Pacioretty and Stone, and not to mention the challenges with goaltending. You know, you want someone who has been accustomed to dealing with NHL goaltenders. Clearly, that's been a problem for the Golden Knights, handling Marc-Andre Fleury and his agent, Robin Leonard. You know, that's a serious problem. That you need someone who's got experience to deal with all of that, rather than just, you know, putting it off and saying, hey, you know, I don't have anything to do with, I just play the goalie who's healthy. I don't think that's a reasonable excuse. You know, you could be critical of the management for, you know, offering the goaltenders that they have to the coaching staff. But anyway, you just think about the, you know, if you were to call up somebody who's been a longtime OHL coach, for example, who hasn't had to deal with NHL personalities, I think that'd be a really rough spot and would probably not be fair to a group that is expected to be a contender, no doubt, and especially with the pressure of having missed the playoffs this year.
Dan Duva is with us, voice of the Vegas Golden Knights, who have a lot of big decisions to make in the offseason here. So, Dan, let's talk specifically goalies. We know the gymnastics that they had to do with the salary cap and the Eichel trade and all the injuries and the long-term IR. That created a lot of challenges there. But now you got Logan Thompson, who's playing in the World Championships for Canada and doing really well, and he's obviously a very economical goalie. And you've got Robin Leonard, who had a lot of injury issues, and he's signed for the next few years. Where do you think they go in goal?
Yeah, isn't that the question? if you were to take a step back and just imagine yourself, you know, again, I've mentioned Gerard Gallant a couple of times, the middle of that 2019 season that ultimately got cut short at 71 games, in which the Knights would change coaches but eventually reach the bubble third round and lost to the Dallas Stars. If you would have said to somebody at that point that the Knights are going to be without Marc-Andre Fleury and they're going to be without the guy, forget the name, who they signed to a five-year contract at $5 million per, those two guys are going to be out of the picture and going into year six, you would have been just, you would have been laughed at. So the Knights' goaltending situation has, in my opinion, has just been silly, the way that this is all unfolded, which is not to say it's all the fault of the organization. It's just how things have turned out. Logan Thompson has been the great, believe it or not, steady hand in all of this, rising up from, you know, college hockey in Canada, not American college hockey, but from the WHL to Brock University and then the ECHL in South Carolina, 1 year in the abbreviated American League, and he was the best goalie in the American League, and now here he is, and he was the guy that they picked over Robin Leonard down the stretch. Lauren Brossois was injured as well. Robin Leonard had what we were told yesterday was successful shoulder surgery, and what that recovery looks like, I guess time will tell. They don't really have a sense of the timetable yet. So at this point in time, like, Logan Thompson seems to be the most likely guy who would be on the Knights' opening day lineup card. Maybe Robin Leonard recovers, but there's more to sort out there. I mean, it's more than the injury. I mean, there have been issues with, and it's been well documented, the communication problems and so on, and whether that changes because of the coaching change, I don't know. But there's a lot to sort out there. And, you know, Lauren Brossois makes too much money. I don't see how they managed to keep him. So at this point in time, the best guess would be Thompson and Leonard as the goalies on your roster. But I don't feel supremely confident that that's necessarily going to be what it looks like come middle of October But I think Logan Thompson is here. I mean, as you point out, he's economically speaking the guy for the job. But who else? Is this really a team that you can put on the shoulders of Logan Thompson, who's played, you know, 30 professional games at the NHL level?
Now, but so what does this say about a franchise that treats their coaching staff or their head coaching staff like a revolving door? What does it say to the next guy that's going to come in? And if that guy does well, being potentially pushed out after a few years, you can't have any stability when you're consistently changing coaches for a franchise is still in its infancy and it's been to the playoffs every year except this year.
Yep, that's the word stability. And you would imagine it, you walk in the door day one of an organization with the Golden Knights, your head coach wins the Jack Adams Award, goes to the Stanley Cup Final. You think, boy, you've got a coach here that's going to be in for the long haul. Stability, right? And then 2.5 years in, management decides to make a change. And that sort of opened the door to, rather than the stability model, they're going to go another route. I mentioned Lou Lamoriello earlier. Jacques Lemaire was the coach of the Devils when they won in 95. Since Jacques Lemaire won the Cup in 95 for the Devils, New Jersey has made 17 head coaching changes. Not all of them were made by Lou. He obviously left to go to Toronto and now has gone to the Islanders. But point is that, there is a certain mindset of stability at head coach is not a goal. You would think that it would be, and some organizations it seems to be. But for some managers, and it appears George McPhee, Kelly McCrimmon, are taking a page out of Lou Lamoriello's book, that it's not about the stability, it's about the voice and the messaging, and sometimes that voice grows tired. So stability be damned. We need the voice that's going to get the most out of these guys, and then it's accountability so that, perhaps players became too comfortable under Gerard Gallant. Perhaps they became too comfortable under Pete DeBoer. And again, you've got a lot of talented players who are making a lot of money, veterans. Do those guys need to be shaken out of their comfort level? The word entitlement comes to mind with some people. Not any specific Golden Knights, just veteran players who are making a lot of money who are not perhaps at their very best. So I think that you would, again, in my opinion, you'd think stability would be good, but it seems to me that the organization is prioritizing that voice, the fresh voice, over the stability.
Dan, it'll be interesting to see where Vegas goes from here. Certainly we'll be watching from afar in Nashville. Thanks so much for doing this, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Great. Thanks, guys. Good to be with you.
Dan Duva is the play-by-play voice of the Golden Knights on radio, and we do appreciate him joining us. There'll be a lot of pressure on the next head coach. Mm-hmm. So this will be the third one, and the first year of each coach they've had to this point, Stanley Cup Finals, Conference Finals. So there'll be pressure on the next guy. You better go deep, man, or things are going to go south in a hurry. We'll come back, wrap up the second hour next. Nashville's own Big Machine Distillery wants to send you to the inaugural Tennessee Whiskey Trail Experience to celebrate International Tennessee Whiskey Day. That'll be Saturday, May 21st. That's coming up. Nissan Stadium this Saturday. Text in the word whiskey right now. Text in the word whiskey to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, to win a pair of tickets to see that. We'll give away a pair of tickets also see George Thorogood at the Ryman on Thursday before we get out of here this hour. Special thanks to Dan Duva. We're going to have Jonathan Hutton coming up from Outkick to begin the third hour. We're going to get into a lot of Titans stuff. And, it was pretty interesting. I had a conversation with a former player this morning before our show, and they were expressing their concern for Treylon Burks. And we were just kind of talking about the pressure that we were discussing yesterday on the show, whether it's fair or, unfair. This is what it is. It wasn't fair to Corey Davis for everybody to tag him as the first receiver taken in the draft and the fifth pick overall. But that's what it is. He didn't tell the Titans to do that, but they did it. And, by the way, every player wants to be drafted high, and this is what comes with it, expectations. And sometimes unfairly, but that's how it works. So you don't get to control that. You don't get to dictate the expectation levels and what people are going to say. Treylon Burks didn't ask the Titans to trade away their number one receiver to Philadelphia. They didn't ask, you know, the Titans to trade up to get his services at 18 while he wanted to be a first-round pick, while he wanted to be drafted high. Well, young man, you did. And now it's welcome to the league. And, you know, I don't know him at all, so I'm not saying what he can handle and what he can't handle. But as a lot of college, you know, kids go through, you're not in college anymore. You know, you're not in Kansas anymore. And welcome to the NFL.
You're not in Arkansas anymore.
You're not in Arkansas anymore. Okay? And it is a growing up welcome to the NFL really, really fast. And, I mean, he's already hearing stuff. Like, that was what started the conversation. Like, I didn't love this weekend, the rookie minicamps. Like, he's already, you know, it's like, you know, leaving practice early. Not. It's like, I know, but he's like, you know, they're not going to be able to. This is where Traylon's going to have to realize, hey, man, you're in the NFL now, and if you thought the SEC had a lot of reporters and a lot of eyes on their product, which they do, you know, you're going to find out in the National Football League, man, everything is scrutinized. So how will he handle the pressure, fair, unfair? It's irrelevant. It's what it is. How is he going to handle that moving forward?
It's yet to be seen. You know, it's unfair to him. But hey, this is a grown man league, and you know, a lot of things are unfair. But it is what it is. You're getting paid a lot of money, and you know, unfair, you know, usually isn't one of those things that, you know, that gets a guy an extra year or gets a guy, you know, that he can be shielded from the criticism because it's unfair that he's a rookie and it's unfair that, you know, the Titans traded away their number one guy. So we're going to shield Burks from it. Nah, unfair is not going to shield him from anything, but it is truly unfair that he has to walk into a situation that he's walking into. And if he's a fourth round pick and the heat is bothering him and he has to sit out and he misses a few plays the next day, no one talks about it. No one even really recognizes it.
Nope.
But he's the first, not only is he the first, you know, pick of the Tennessee Titans, but he's the first pick after they trade their number one receiver. So, is it unfair? Absolutely is unfair, but it's the world of sports. It's the world, you know, that it's the profession that he's chosen. And, you know, I think he'll be okay. I truly do. From a expectation standpoint, or can he handle the pressure? I think he can handle the pressure, but I know many people are going to look at it from this standpoint. Well, if he's not, you know, producing the way a first round should produce, he couldn't handle the pressure. No, that's not the case. The case is the kid's not ready. That's what the case is. If he's shown that he can play and you see it in him, but he needs seasoning. A.J. Brown, first year, he needed seasoning. That second year he came back, you started to see the progression. You started to see the growth. It was the same with Corey Davis until he got hurt.
The problem, you know, with Corey Davis, this is the fear, I think, for, and I think about this a lot, because A.J. Brown, relatively, and we just talked about the history yesterday, we did an extensive history of Titans wide receivers.
And it wasn't flattering.
It wasn't super flattering. But A.J., relative to most, was the quickest contributor, right? He had over 1,000 in his rookie year. And I can remember a buzz in that initial rookie camp. He came out, he really looked like he was ready. He was ahead of the curve. There's been so many others, and this is what I think the worry is with Burks, for whatever reason. Corey Davis, what happened? He got behind early. He got injured, right? He had a groin. I don't remember exactly, but it took him a while.
Never available.
And he got behind, and he was constantly playing catch-up. His rookie year, he missed a lot of time.
He missed, what, five
He missed a
games,
lot of time.
I think he ended up,
we
he
can
ended
go
playing,
look,
yeah,
but it was
games.
A lot. He was, and even when he played, it was like he's still playing catch-up. Kenny Britt, constantly the hamstrings, mm-hmm. right? Constantly falling behind. And so I think
Kendall Wright was the same
Kendall
way.
Kendall Wright yes, was the was. Same way.
Yes, he was.
So this is where I think Treylon Burks the worry. You don't get a lot of benefit of the doubt when the history – he has no control over the history Mm-mm. before him, and he has no control over the fact that he got drafted right after they trade A.J. Brown. But people are going to have him under the microscope, mm-hmm. and if he falls behind, that's just that extra concern of, oh, man, we saw this with XYZ. But what's going to happen on week one if he's not quite ready? So I just hope he can stay ahead of the curve and be out there to get those reps as much as he can possibly get. Because it's going to be hard enough, even if you don't miss a single day mm-hmm. or a single workout, to go in there and be ready to help the team in day one of your rookie year. But if he falls behind, we saw what happened to Corey Davis.
Well,
on
Corey
the
didn't catch up really into his second year. And then the third year, he ended up getting hurt again.
Yeah.
And he was well on his way to having a 1,000-yard season before he got hurt. Yep. And then he has to play catch-up, and he comes back again the next following year and has his best year of his career.
His fourth year was a solid year, but even that year he missed two years.
Missed two games.
But when he was on the field, he looked like a good
season. He looked like a better player. Much better player, yes.
But it took a long time to get there. There was a lot of growing pains.
Let's continue the discussion on into the third hour. Jonathan Hutton from Outkick will join us next. But first, how about a pair of tickets to see George Thorogood and the Destroyers at the Ryman this Thursday? Caller 5 on our phone line, driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com, 615-737-1025. 737-1025. Caller 5 will win those tickets. If you can go enjoy that show on Thursday night at the Ryman, jump in there, and Max Herz will get your fifth call. We'll win those tickets from our Hillside Medical Game Studio. We'll come back. Hour number 3 next.